A Contra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Today, we're doing something a bit different. We're really getting into the foundations, you could say, of a whole culture, using the work of John D. Leon on French literature. Now, I know maybe you're thinking literature, French literature. Isn't that just old books?
Right. That's often the perception, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Leon completely flips that. Our goal today isn't just listing famous authors. We want to uncover the core ideas. The actual DNA that shows French literature isn't just a collection, but something, well, actively built, a kind of cultural engineering project.
Exactly. It's both reflecting French identity and shaping it.
Mm.
And looking at it this way gives us, you know, a set of tools. It helps us understand how any national identity or even maybe an organization's culture gets put together. It also shows how creativity can thrive even with tight rules and why writers in France often have this huge public voice, this kind of moral authority. Yeah, it's fascinating. We're basically tracking how a specific piece of land and a bunch of different dialects got hammered into this single really influential culture, and literature, setting rules for literature, was key to that.
So our guide here is Professor John D. Leon. He's the chair of French and Francophone Studies at the University of Virginia, got his PhD from Yale. But this is someone who's lived and breathed this stuff for decades.
And what makes his take so powerful is his focus. He zeroes in on the 17th century classical period, you know, Louis XIV, the Ancien Régime. Most of us just see that as, well, history.
Ancient history, yeah.
But Leon sees it as the foundational moment, the blueprint.
Right. Instead of just seeing a jumble of books over centuries, his focus on that era of rules lets him analyze French literature like it's a carefully constructed building.
Yeah.
He shows how groups like the Académie Française weren't just stuffy old academics. They were literally formalizing the identity of the tradition.
And he makes that connection really clear. He bridges the gap between, you know, super specialized research and a bigger cultural picture. He shows those historical rules weren't random. They were kind of the pressure cooker that formed the core traits of French thought.
Okay, so let's get into his main idea. It's pretty striking. Leon argues that French literature isn't just stuff written in French. It's a deliberately constructed cultural, social, and institutional concept.
Yeah.
Like, it's an ongoing national argument about beauty, about truth, about how society ought to work.
Yeah, it's this unique mix. He argues its global power comes from blending formal innovation, new ways of writing, with deep philosophical questions and real social engagement. So it's both this lab for artistic experiments and a stage for critiquing society, often at the same time.
So we're going beyond just what books were written, you know, the famous names, to why they matter and how this whole tradition works. Leon traces this tension, this argument, between order and clarity on one side and rebellion and passion on the other, from way back in the medieval period right up to today's Francophone writers. It's a tradition that kind of has to keep arguing with itself to stay alive.
And to get that argument, we have to start at the very beginning, what Leon calls space, time, and language. It's so important to remember that France, the country, and French, the language, they weren't just there. They had to be created, politically created.
It's easy to forget, right?
Yeah.
France was all these different regions speaking totally different languages, basically.
Absolutely. And that's why Leon points to the 1539 Ordinance of Villers-Cotterêts. This was a political decree. It said the Parisian dialect had to be used for all legal and government stuff. This one move didn't just unify the law. It kicked off this whole process of centralizing the nation and setting a linguistic standard, the standard that all future literature would kind of be measured against. The government basically invented the standard language for its writers.
Wow. And that push for a standard really comes to a head in the 17th century with what Leon terms rules and pleasure. This is when the Académie Française gets going, 1635. And their job, essentially, was to guard and purify that new standard French.
Yeah, they were the language police in a way. They set up these really specific ideas about what made literature good, which gives us those famous formal rules, especially for plays like the Three Unities.
Right, the Unities. One main story, one location, all happening within 24 hours. Sounds incredibly strict.
It does. But here's Leon's key insight. These rules weren't just about restriction. They were tied to this intellectual satisfaction, this pleasure the audience got from vraisemblance, making things seem plausible, believable, and by in seance decorum, things being appropriate.
Okay, so the audience actually enjoyed seeing complex human psychology play out within that structured, rational frame.
Exactly. And this leads to one of Leon's really core arguments. He shows the great writers, the geniuses, didn't just follow the rules slavishly. They used them. They kind of weaponized them. The real brilliance wasn't just sticking to the rules, but finding freedom within those constraints.
And Molière's the perfect example, isn't he?
Absolutely perfect. He used the very stiffness of the classical forms, the rhyming couplets, the unities to make fun of the hypocrisy in the society that supposedly loved those rules. He proved that sometimes having tight boundaries forces you to be incredibly creative, incredibly insightful.
So that classical focus on order, on clarté, clarity, takes us to the next big theme, reason and its others. Clarté is tied right into Descartes, the Enlightenment. Figures like Voltaire using sharp, rational wit.
Yeah, Voltaire's prose is like a scalpel, right? Using logic to cut through superstition and tyranny, making everything clear, rational, visible.
But you said earlier, Leon presents this as a debate, not just a straight line of reason.
Precisely. It's not a monologue. If Descartes and Voltaire represent the rational mind, Leon shows us we also have to account for reasons others. The heart, maybe the soul. You get the intense, passionate, subjective feelings of Rousseau, who championed individual gut feelings over cold, structured reason.
So Clarté wasn't the only game in town, even then. It was always being argued against.
Always. That tension is the tradition, according to Leon. And then you also have someone like Pascal, deep, intense, paradoxical faith, challenging a purely rational view of the world from a completely different angle. So it's this constant interplay, logic, passion, faith, doubt. That's the engine.
And that engine seems to shift gears dramatically in the 19th century. We move into individuals in society. The novel almost becomes like a form of social science. Less about abstract philosophy, more about watching people.
Totally. That's the rise of realism. Think about Balzac and his massive project, La Comédie Humaine. His aim was literally to create this encyclopedic, almost scientific picture of French society, showing how money, power, social class dictated everything in people's lives. He was like a sociologist with a pen.
Systematically dissecting French life, yeah.
And that reaches its absolute peak, maybe, with Flaubert's Madame Bovary. Leon frames it as the ultimate in detailed social analysis. You see these individual romantic dreams just get absolutely crushed by dull, everyday provincial reality.
It's like a 400-page study of, I don't know, existential boredom and disappointment. It feels surprisingly modern, actually.
It really does. And that intense focus on society leads us straight into the writer and the world. This is where Leon unpacks that unique French idea of the écrivain grave, the engaged writer. Writing in France is very rarely seen as just a private aesthetic thing. It's often a serious public, political, moral act.
And the key moment Leon points to is the Dreyfus affair,
Yeah.
right, with Zsolzs' J'accuse.
Yes. I mean, think about the sheer nerve, the moral force it took for a novelist to use his fame and his platform to just blast open this huge political injustice. He basically threw down the gauntlet, setting a standard for writers as public intellectuals.
A standard that carried right on through the 20th century with figures like Sartre, who famously said that writers are responsible, that writing is a political act.
Exactly. But Leon also brings this right up to the present, critically, by looking at the global stage. We have to talk about the rise of Francophone literature.
Right, writers from former French colonies.
People like Aimé Césaire from Martinique, a key figure in the Negritude movement, they took the French language itself, the language of the colonizer, and turned it around. They appropriated it to challenge colonialism, to talk about their own experiences. Suddenly, the language itself becomes this site of resistance, of transformation.
So the tradition isn't static. It keeps changing, keep being challenged from within and without.
That's maybe the biggest takeaway. It's about continuous transformation, not just preserving old forms, but constantly questioning them, adapting them, while somehow keeping this core spirit alive.
Okay, let's try and boil this down. What are the key messages for you, the listener? First, Lyons really hammers home this idea of literature as a national construction. It wasn't organic. It was built through specific political choices, institutions like the academy. And that makes you think, doesn't it? How were our own cultural traditions defined? Or even the culture where you work? Who made the rules early on?
Yeah, who got included, who got left out. And tied to that is the second big theme, this enduring tension between rules and freedom. We saw it with Molière. That classical structure provided the framework, the thing to push against for later movements like Romanticism or Modernism to stage their own
It's
revolutions.
like you need the walls to punch through them.
Kind of. And the reflection there is that in almost any creative field design, business strategy, whatever, sometimes having tight constraints, clear boundaries, can actually force real innovation. It leads to a unique kind of focused excellence. Yes.
And the third theme has to be the writer as public intellectual, the écrivain engagé.
Yeah.
In France, writing often carries this weight, this expectation of taking a moral stand in public life, which makes you wonder, what responsibilities do influential voices today, journalists, artists, even big social media figures actually have? Should they be engaged?
That's a huge question. Now, Leon also offers some really potent core statements that kind of capture the essence of this whole tradition. Should we share a couple?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, here's one I think is crucial. The genius of French classical literature lies not in its adherence to rules, but in its ability to find freedom within constraint.
Meaning the rules weren't just limitations, they actually enabled a certain kind of deep psychological exploration.
Precisely. They focused the energy. Okay, here's another. Every major transformation in French society has been accompanied by, and often preceded by, innovations in literary form.
Wow. So writers are like cultural early warning systems.
Yeah.
Sensing shifts in society before anyone else, and it shows up in how they write.
That's the idea. Like seismographs, picking up the tremors, and one more. The French literary tradition teaches us that elegance and revolution are not opposites, but partners in the dance of cultural evolution.
Meaning that to really challenge the status quo effectively, maybe you need artistic skill. That beautiful form and radical content can actually work together.
Exactly. They reinforce each other. Powerful critique often needs sophisticated delivery to land with force.
Okay, so how can you, listening now, use these ideas? Well, first, it can definitely enhance your reading experience.
Mm-hmm.
If you pick up a French novel or play, you now have this context, this map. You can ask, okay, which part of this long conversation is this author joining? Are they playing with classical clarity? Are they doing that 19th century social dissection? Are they pushing against the language itself, like Césaire?
It adds whole new layers. And second, you can apply Leon's critical lens to your own world. Look at your company culture, your local community, even national identity. Ask, what are the founding rules here, stated or unstated? What institutions shaped this? Who decided what was important, and maybe whose voices weren't heard in that process? Mm. It helps you see how culture, all culture, is constructed.
And third, maybe there's a lesson in innovation from that rules and pleasure idea.
Mm.
Maybe the best place to find a breakthrough isn't always a totally blank slate. Sometimes having clear boundaries forces you to be more inventive, to find truly original solutions within those limits.
Mm. Yeah. That resonates.
So wrapping up, what surprised me most, thinking about all this, is how that vitality comes from constant argument, constant transformation. It's not about finding a perfect static form, but about the energy generated by the ongoing debate between order and freedom, individual and society.
For me, the most valuable lesson is maybe that idea of freedom within constraint, that wrestling with limitations, whether they're artistic rules, social pressures, or even just the limits of language itself, is where the really powerful, lasting work often comes from. It's not about avoiding the tension, but working through it.
A powerful thought to end on. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Yekatra Foundation.